From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Mbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
Good evening, and welcome to Beyond Governance here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm delighted to be sharing this space once again with you as we unpack social and economic issues shaping our country, always through the governance lenses, I beg your pardon, with good insight from my esteemed guests. Tonight, I'm joined by Professor John Foster-Pedile, Dean and Director of Henry Business School. Our conversation moves beyond just pronouncements to focus on action. How can we bridge persistent gaps between policy and implementation, and how we move promises to delivery, from ideas to impact? Before we get into the gist of our conversation, it is customary to pause and acknowledge with gratitude the team behind the scenes who makes this broadcast possible. On the control, I've got Craig Guthrie, who's standing in, and as well as Betsy, who's Kukuletu, who's standing for Betsy Masilela. Thank you so much, Kukuletu, for organizing the conversation with Honorable Prof here. Moving on swiftly, I would like to invite you, beloved listener, to join our conversation. Share your views, your thoughts with us via our social media platform. We'd love to hear from you. Our SM line is 03459. The telegram is 061-895-109. And of course, your views and thoughts are welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. As we proceed in South Africa, September marks the public servants month. We have the opportunity to reflect on the essential of the country's 1.7 million or so public servants. Recently, we heard, from the president of the country, President Cyril Ramaphosa, calling on all citizens to hold government accountable, stressing the need to rebuild trust and strengthen multi-pillar principle. That is obviously putting, citizens forward. In the same token, we also heard, recently from the former president of the Republic, Thabo Mbeki, who offered a sovereign critique, warning that South Africans can no longer pretend that the public service is working for them. He pointed out to the collapsing of municipalities, load shedding, dry taps, and dysfunctional clinic as evidence of a deeper moral ethical crisis. Thabo Mbeki's message was clear. Without ethics, the state cannot serve the people to its full potential. So in my assessment, we are confronted with two intertwined realities, a call for accountability and partnership on one hand, and a stark warning about ethical decay and systemic failure on the other. The question is, how do we reconcile the perspectives and chart the path toward professional and ethical citizen-centered public service that listens and that empowers? To help unpack these kind of issues, I'm joined by Professor John Foster-Pedile, who's a regular on this particular show, to give us a sense from his end on how to take the process forward. Without any waste of your time, let me take this opportunity to welcome Prof. Prof, good evening and welcome to Beyond Governance.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nimrod. And if I may say, congratulations on your book, which is in the things now. That's a wonderful book you've written on state-operated enterprises governance. And I hope everyone gets to read it.
Thank you so much, Prof. I appreciate it for that warm and uplifting message. Prof, I've sort of painted the context. We have those two powerful and contrasting values from two different presidents. What's your overall assessment of what Cyril Ramaphosa is saying, that we need to hold the government accountable, but Mbeki, on the other hand, saying, everything is just drying up, the moral decaying is washing up, the taps are dry, municipalities are bankrupt. What do you make of that from overall governance system?
Well, I think President Ramaphosa is saying, hold us accountable, work with us. And President Mbeki is warning, without ethics, the state cannot deliver. And in spite of the difference between them, both messages are pretty consistent, really. The state must serve, but citizens must demand honesty and effectiveness. So while there is a frustrating difference between them, we have to understand that they're both accepting there's a problem here. And Ramaphosa is saying by holding us accountable, work with us, he's actually asking for people to stand up, for citizens to challenge. Perhaps he's finding it difficult, in fact, to manage the municipalities and the service themselves. And he needs people to be more outspoken. But there also needs to be, of course, a much better response and accountability on these municipalities and anyone who can't, public servants who's not delivering. So everybody's frustrated, I think, in some ways. And even in countries where things perhaps work better, they're still frustrated. But it's some basics we need. We need people to have services. We cannot, you know, we cannot talk our way out of that. There's facts and figures. We have to make sure that we don't just discuss this, but we work out a few things that'll make a difference, that'll change the dial.
Thanks for that overview, Prof. One of the critical issues is, you know, we know that we have a lot of good policies, but implementation has been the biggest challenge. You know, Batopilo was there, NDP is there, and a whole lot of you know, very solid policy, you know, guidelines, but implementation has been a biggest issue. How can we use governance as a lever to try and close the gap between the design of the policy and implementation? And what seems to be the issue at the implementation side? Because formulation, everybody seems to be okay, and everybody seems to know, and most public servants, to their credit, they have a very good grasp of policy design and development, but implementation is a completely different ballgame. What is it that we need to do differently to get implementation right?
Well, there's wonderful books and articles written of things like the knowing-doing gap. You know, when people are thinking strategically, you imagine they're sitting in ivory towers and they go off and they come up with these wonderful policies and ideas that somehow, by some magic, they get magicked into existence. Once you've designed the idea, somebody else must be a lower level person. I mean, I'm being slightly cynical here, goes and implements this. Well, it's absolute rubbish. You know, you have, firstly, any strategy should not, or any policy should not, simply be talking about what we should be doing. It should be useful. It should be feasible, it should be doable, and it should be viable. It should be done in a way that people can afford and money's going to happen. The art is always, how do you design things that people can work with? You can't just live in an abstract world. You've also got to live in a concrete world. So by dividing the world up into politicians who create laws and somebody else who makes them work, of course it's going to fail. How could that work? You need to design like Singapore did. You need to design, you know, public servants that are held to account by the results they get. And if they don't get held to account, they lose their jobs or they get thoroughly trained. We haven't had that. We've had people put into jobs without the skills in the background for all sorts of reasons. And the delusion we've had is that somehow, some magic, somebody else will do it. There's a wonderful quote that, you know, everybody knew it should be done. You know, somebody could have done it. Anybody could have done it. And, you know, but nobody did, you know, as all this, these people called different people. And it's like that always. So we have to start thinking about, yeah, we're not here to postulate and just talk about what we should do. We have to get our hands dirty and think about, how can we design systems that work? And we have to say, you're only rewarded or measured when you create some outcomes, when people get more water, when you do maintenance on whatever it is you need to maintain, when you look after your water pipes, when you don't allow corruption to steal a massive amount, because you'll get away with that for 10, 15 years. Nobody's repaired the water pipes or done the electricity infrastructure. But in the end, it costs you way more to try and replace that infrastructure than if you've just been repairing it all the time. That repair service mentality of mechanical service, I mean, is just largely absent. And that is one of the things that corruption damages most. You may not see the implications of the corruption immediately, but you will see it in the long term, and you will see it in most painful ways. So we have to paint the picture for people, is that, you know, we have to make sure when somebody gets into public service, it's not a ticket to earn some money for yourself or enrich yourself or my turn to eat, all that sort of nonsense. It's a service.
I couldn't agree with you more, Prof. You know, when you look at the structure of a house, when you've got a small crack you don't attend to that small crack, and by the time you wake up the entire crack, you can't fix it anymore. You just have to demolish the entire infrastructure. So it goes to the same type of thinking in the public sector that we have to take care of small things and be consistent. Issues of repairs. I mean, when you go to schools, you go to clinic, the ceilings are literally falling off. The globes are not fixed, like small things. By the time you attend to the entire infrastructure, you literally have to redo everything because it's in such in a state of disrepair, because those issues were never attended to in time.
Yeah, it's so boring to talk about service and mechanical things and, mending things. But that's what we have to do. We have to have a culture where those things really matter and where it's not just a matter of, talking and putting a policy in place and taking half the money somewhere it shouldn't have gone. You've got to make things happen. You've got to make it values. You've got to train people for that.
Absolutely. One of the biggest issues, Prof, I mean, again, we've touched this when we started, the municipalities and departments that often cite financial constraint as a barrier to delivery. And yet we see areas, other areas making progress with the same limited resource. Could you maybe share practical examples on how leadership, innovation, or partnership can help achieve the impact, even if the budget is very tight?
Well, firstly, I think you've got to have a purpose, what do you say, Batopele? What do you say about that? What does that mean? Is it just a slogan or do you actually serve people? So the first thing comes with a set of values and a set of examples. Leadership is not about being able to make big statements and use power to just simply influence. We're living in a world of public service delivery, so that people who have very little can actually live effectively. And by living better, they have more time to go to school and to study, and by studying, they can get chances of being able to build businesses and make things work. We're de-skilling society by the lack of education. That's something that's happened. We're going to have to turn that around and make it very clear. And secondly, a good management example is that once you've decided something should be done, you measure it and you continue to chase it. But you talk about the implications of this. You don't get people to think that life is this glorious shortcut with a marvelous car because I've got a whole load of money out of a contract. You think the public service is a moral issue. It's about you decide to be accountable. It's a trust issue as well. You decide to be accountable and your job is to make things work. So money is only part of it. Some of the failures come from inefficiency, corruption, lack of accountability, not just money. If we use our money well, we can get more value. We need to train people to use money well and praise people when they do, make that meritorious in society, not just the acquisition of a certain amount of wealth for yourself. We have to understand that if we are going to live in a society, we don't try and make it for a few people, we make it for the majority. And you start with the poorest, because the poorest have to have an opportunity. And then you work on productivity, delivery, and making things that provide value to people. And when you start thinking about that, you've got a certain dignity and honor in your life. You're doing things that people will respect you for, not that you'll have to hide for the rest of your life. You will deliver things. And the truth is, if you do deliver things, then people will respect you for that. They will come to you and you will get more and more opportunities. You will get a genuine and deep respect from people much more, and you won't have to hide and duck and dive and dig out all the rhetoric you can and defensiveness to say how great you are. Other people will say how great you are based on your results.
Those are very sobering points that you've shared with us, Prof. If you've just joined us, Nimrod Ntembele here. I'm joined by Professor John Foster Pederley, who is a Dean and Director at the Henley Business School. Prof and I unpacking the Public Service Month, which is meant to give us an opportunity to rebuild the public trust and uphold the accountability principle, and most importantly, reflect on some of the sovereign critique offered by the former president Thabo Mbeki. I welcome your thoughts, your views. It's always important to have this kind of a conversation. Our telegraph is 061-895-10195. And of course, your views and thoughts are welcome via my Twitter, my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. Prof, as one of the issues that you raised that we always grapple with in the public service, it is that of meritocracy. And values. To what extent do you think this government, which has been talking about, professionalization of the public service, is winning the battle, by using, amongst others, the meritocratic template that we have to get, appoint the right people at the right level and support those people? Are we winning this tide? Are we winning the battle? Is this government winning the battle? Or it is just a slogan about public professionalization of the public service without necessarily looking at what are the key pillars? What is that we need to anchor professionalization of the public service? Your take on that, Prof.
Public service is just that. When Lee Kuan Yew developed in the public service in Singapore, and the senior position, he decided firstly that controversially everything would be in English because that was the language, and this was the Chinese people who'd escaped from the Malaysian or been pushed out of the Malaysian thing. Secondly, he made sure he trained people really, really well. He decided to pull people in from around the world who had skills, and he paid the politicians really, really well, probably better than anywhere in the world. But he had a zero tolerance for corruption, so people would lose that and be put in prison. Now, that was relatively easy, if you could argue, not that it was easy at all, because he had a pretty homogenous culture and a very clear purpose. So when you stuff your public service with people who don't have the skills, who are there to uphold a political point of view, or who feel it's their turn to get the entitlement, then while one can sympathize with a huge amount of that, you have to understand the consequences of that. And it's not your middle class who will suffer firstly from that at all. In fact, it'll create a middle class of inflated salaries of people who really don't know what they're doing. The people who suffer are the people who should get a schooling, who should be able to get hospitals, their kids should be able to learn enough to make opportunities to build small companies and have the skill sets to contribute. If you deprive people of those skill sets, how can they contribute? They'll get bitter, they'll enter crime, they'll encourage corruption. So what we've done wrong, what we need to correct fundamentally, is to say that public service has a really real and noble purpose, and that's to help build up people in the community fairly. It doesn't matter where you're from, what language you speak, what color your skin is. It doesn't matter per se. What matters is that the people who don't have the opportunity get it. And in our country, the most marginalized majority population, African people, we have to really help them get the skills. And anyone who would not believe in that should be held accountable. And who can hold them accountable? Well, the press can. Programs like yours can. We can, as society, citizen groups can. But of course, we get deflated because it seems we're making no progress. And because when the military gets taken over, the courts don't do what they have to do, there's massive backlog, so there's a sense of hopelessness. We have to start by thinking that this is not a battle we're going to win easily in our lifetime, but do you want our children to have this same scenario? We don't. So together, you, me, and everyone else wants to do it, say, well, how do our kids get the opportunity? And then you start making things work that happens. You commit yourself to training. When you find people who are really honestly committed, you help them. When your companies need people who can get a job done, you train extra. You train your supplier networks. You train whoever it is. So make sure that skills are getting in. And you have to teach people what a standard is. So many people don't understand that when you put a tap in, it needs to work exactly like so. Or when you're building something, these safety standards are not there to be cut. They're there to build quality houses that will last a long time and in the end will cost you a quarter of what they would have done by the time you've had constant repairs. That reality, which is boring to talk about, and we think that seems so mundane, is actually the truth. The mundane is what's going to make us work here. Things at work without spending too much on them, just so it progressively gets better and better, and people get the opportunity to earn money, educate themselves. And that is what public service should do. It should be helping people get capability. And of course, it's easy to hijack that and demonstrate it. But if you know better than that, and if you're willing to commit and talk out and speak out, then challenge. Be public about it. Go into your municipality. Try not to blame the poor person in front of you who's got to deal with a thousand complaining people. That person is burnt out. Make sure that the message is held coherently and goes up with evidence to more senior levels and get the press to support you. Continually start building an agenda which is a citizen activism of a positive kind, for people, to help people. And it's the mundane actions like that that don't seem as if they're really important that are really, really, truly important. Speaking out at the braai or the dinner table when somebody says, no, corruption doesn't matter. What can we do about it? And just try and, for yourself, argue why it does matter for people and what it takes away from the country and from opportunity. And imagine what it would be like if we all had a little bit more money available. If you could send your kids to school easier, if you got a slightly higher salary, and if you had better systems, life would be easier. You could get more done, you create more value. And that's what we have to think. Just imagine a bit what it could be like.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break, Prof. You've given us a number of critical points that I want us to thresh out when we come back a little bit more. Craig, let's take a quick break and we'll be back in just a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I am joined by the one and only Professor, my good friend from Healing Business School, John Foster Piddley, who's no longer strange to the show. Prof, once again, your presence and thought-provoking insight is giving us a posture that we can adopt as a country moving forward. Before we took that break, Prof, you raised a number of very important points. Your reference point being on Singapore and how the Desi Yong Moon at the time, had to get the right people, not within the country. If they were not, competent or skilled enough, they would get them outside. He said he had zero tolerance towards corruption. And the other point that you raised that is so important is that we often underestimate the suffering that, in our inability to deliver has on the poor and the working class. You raise another important point about upholding the public value, upholding the public value of public service, which is a very noble cause. And you raise issues around the need for public service to create skills, skill sets that are necessary, promoting entrepreneurship. You also raise an important point about teaching people the standards, because everything, if it's not done by the standards, if it's not done by the spec, it's not going to work. You also raise a very important point around us as a people having to understand that the basic routine things that will take us very far. The last point that you raise is about citizen activism. I could not agree with you more, because if every single one of us stand up, it's only when we can really address the shortcoming of the public service. But here's another issue, Prof. We, given the unemployment rate that is sitting north of 70% in this country, when you look at youth who have now ventured into businesses, we've got a number of talented youth. But when you look at how they're doing business with the state, and some of these guys are not being paid on time, how can we address inability or the shortcoming of the state having to pay entrepreneurs on time? Because we talk about meritocracy. How do you talk about meritocracy? How do you talk about building a strong middle class through entrepreneurship, and yet you don't pay them? It takes 6 months to pay them. And all the excuses, we still have CEO, CFO, we still have chief directors. Surely those people should not be in those positions if they fail to pay, you know, invoices of the people that have paid and have delivered services.
Yeah, we need to obviously create a lot of incentives for good things to happen. And, you know, when people do the right thing, make stories about it. We also need to make it pretty painful when people do it wrong. And I don't mean punishing, stigmatizing lack of training or lack of skills. It's like willful, you know, holding back of money for the small entrepreneurs. And you have to question so much these days about what is the motivation about what's going on. So if you've got a small business and somebody decides to not pay you, then you very likely will go bust pretty quickly because, you know, you need cash flow. Cash is king, as you know. So that is something we need more discussion about and more clarity. Data is so important. What great businesses do they and great governments do, they start to share data on performance delivery that you can trust. I used to be a pilot, and what happened was that there were quite a lot of problems going on in aviation. And so the Institute for Aviation Medicine said, well, we're going to talk about these problems. We're going to ask all the pilots, aircraft controllers, engineers, what's going wrong? We're going to protect your identity. You can blow the whistle on them, tell all the stories. We won't go into the newspaper about them. And we're going to then share all these stories to the community of pilots. And they did that. And suddenly it was like, oh my goodness, people are falling asleep across the Atlantic. They've got the wrong engine parts on. Somebody was drinking when they were flying or whatever it was. And it was like all of a sudden, this was distributed across the whole pilot community in Britain at the time. And everyone said, flying is really, really dangerous. But what happened was people saw the problem and started to self-organize immediately. We need to share data really openly and let people self-organize when they start to see the data. And people do self-organize, but we're hiding data. We're too scared of it. We're scared of people losing their jobs. I don't want people to lose their jobs per se, but I certainly a lot more than that don't want people who don't deserve to suffer unnecessarily because of greed and incapability.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
My name is Nimrod Mbele. If you've just joined us, I'm joined by Professor John Foster Pedele, who's Dean and Director at the Henry Business School. We are talking September, which is dubbed Public Month in South Africa, which essentially meant to, you know, give us a bit of an opportunity to restore public trust, which is dwindling, and uphold the Batopili principles. And you know, on the basis of that, we taking an opportunity on this very sobering critique offered by President Thabo Mbeki when he said South Africans can no longer pretend the public service is working for them for their benefit, pointing out to collapse in municipalities, load shedding, dry taps, and dysfunctional clinics as evidence of deeper moral decay. That's the position that Thabo Mbeki is actually putting forward. And we are using this month just to reflect on some of these issues. Prof, before we took that break, you raised yet another very important point around, you know, the need for data and how people can self-correct, but for data around the malfeasance that is happening, there has to be some level of trust, because people will not come forward to point to gaps if there's no assurance that the first and foremost information is going to be dealt with confidentially, and you will not be naming and shaming, but you know, you are there to try and remedy the problem as humanly as possible. But how do we use that approach that you have given in a constructive way without necessarily getting, you know, making people fearful of the repercussions of them? The truth of the matter, Prof, is that we've had so many whistleblowers who are left and lingering, and whose families have been destroyed. It's become very difficult in a South African environment for whistleblowers to come forward, because nothing is happening, or they either been threatened or even killed. We know of a number of whistleblowers that killed, but how do we get to that point where ordinary South Africans feel free to disclose and to give information about the wrongdoing, and while Kenya says that they've been productive, they've been protected, because that's the data that you need to try and remedy this thing. But without assurance, without safeguarding the lives of people, the livelihoods, let alone their lives, it's going to be very difficult for people to come through, Prof.
Well, it is, especially if you've had a playbook in government, which is a political one, which is to stuff, institutions with your allies, for deployment of people who don't have the skills that will support your political aim. Public service obviously got political elements to it, but merit means getting things done for people. That's what merit is. Without doing that, when it's replaced by political loyalty, so when it becomes about keeping the governing party in power for whatever ideological reason you feel appropriate, then trust erodes. And when trust erodes, people suffer. And when people suffer, you can either get a range of populism or build up, or you get pushed back in chaos. And it's pretty true that people with a lot to lose quite often prefer a form of chaos which disrupts their opposition than having a really coherent opposition. So our opposition, I think, is a people one. Service is only as strong as the integrity behind it. And when somebody like Thabo Mbeki criticizes, and one might think he's just criticizing the government of Ramaphosa, but I personally believe that President Ramaphosa would also very much like us to improve, and is in his own way working to do that. When criticism, should be rooted in hope, and hope provides a strength to build a moral dimension. Whistleblowing is one way of doing it, and we need to have whistleblower protection, and we need to be able to do that, because again, going back to aviation, if there was an airplane accident or somebody did something wrong, you can immediately fire the first person. But these problems are always systemic. So in aviation, you develop something called a just culture. And a just culture means that if you make a mistake, you can go and see your chief pilot or chief engineer and say, I made a mistake. You won't exactly be applauded for it, unless it was something that was totally egregious, selfish, or self-serving, where you really deserve to be fired or lose your job, and you will. In most instances, it is not. Okay, the mistake was made. What were the contributions towards the mistake? How does our chief pilot get this wrong? Did I not make the policies right? Were you not sufficiently trained? Who else was part of this? And what you find in most problems are very, very systemic. And by managing systemic openness like that, you're going to start to build systemic answers. Everybody feels accountable for making a little improvement in their own way. And that sense of a just culture is a super powerful thing. What you've got very often is an unjust culture, where either things are hidden or people who blow the whistle get attacked, or as you said, worse, get killed, and where people are too scared to say anything that they will lose their job or they will be fired. So there are many power dynamics in that, but it's not that we can't deliver. South Africa is more than capable of delivering good services. We have the people who are talented enough to do that. I run a business school. I see people who've had nothing in their lives for three generations walking across that stage with very high qualifications, MBAs from international business school, and starring at it, moving on to great careers. We are full of those stories. We need to tell those stories more and empower those people. And if we can't make government change quickly, we've got to start pushing it on ourselves. It's a force field. If we let those forces have their way, then things will get worse. We have to stand up, and maybe it'll feel like just a battle for ages, but eventually you'll get more and more people on our side. Because why? Because we all want better service. We all want better opportunities for our kids. We all want life to be better in the townships, wherever it is. We want to see people starting jobs. We want to be proud of the organization and of the countries we're looking at. We've had a fantastic win on Saturday with the All Blacks, with a very diverse team. What a wonderful example of what can be done when we sit together. We mustn't give up on this and give way to cynicism. People like us to be cynical, because you're disempowered when you're cynical. You've got to continue to be brave, continue to speak out, and continue to demand ever-increasing improvements in standards.
Couldn't agree with you more, Prof. I mean, when you look at the, you know, the our Springbok and the cricket team have done phenomenally well because, you know, the coach has been able to identify, you know, talent and then build on that on a basis and filling people based on their capabilities and those that don't lack and giving them a bit of support so that they become more competitive. Look, I could not agree with you, Prof, that the problem are systemic, which means you have to look at every aspect of the organization for you to have a better grasp of what are the challenges. And the other point that you raised, which is critical, is that of promoting a just culture. If you promote a just culture, you are encouraging both employee and employees to be honest about some of the gaps, you know, the gaps they experience, and not only just identify gaps, but also put forth solutions that, you know, I don't think I'm performing well because this is where I'm lacking. And sometimes it's not only just about training, it's also about the support which people require. So there's a whole lot that can be done just around just culture, as opposed to being cynical. Because to your point, if we're going to embrace cynicism, we are disempowering people. And even your very best get tired because they've just been overworked and everything is just toxic, everything is just negative. And so those are some of the very brilliant points that you've shared with us. If you've just joined us, it is now 12 minutes to our 7 o'clock. I'm joined by Professor John Foster Pedele, who's a dean and director at the Henley Business School. We're unpacking the September public month. For those who may not know, September has been dubbed public month in South Africa with a view to restore public trust, uphold the Batopele principle. And in this today's conversation, we are reflecting a little bit more on the sobering critique offered by former President Thabo Mbeki, where he warned South Africans that South Africans can no longer pretend that the public service is working for them or working for their benefits, pointing out to the collapsing of municipalities, issues around load shedding, thanks God, is being addressed to, dry taps, now hearing of the water mafias and dysfunctional clinics. We also hear of mafias in all this But the most important thing is that we need to elevate men and women who are really putting shoulders to the wheel, addressing some of these chronic systemic issues. I welcome your views and thoughts on this very empowering conversation. Our telegram is 061-895-1095. And of course, your thoughts and views are welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrMbede. As we move towards the closure, Prof, one of the critical issues that you raised, which resonate with South Africans, resonates with the listeners of the show, it is that of accountability. We all have accountability structures within our workplaces, but half of the time we are not following through. Half the time, our ethics and ethical conduct are found wanting. And purely because, like you say, the fish rot at the top. If judgment or consequence management are not upheld, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to enforce the ethics and accountability. So how do we strengthen accountability at the top, Prof, so that the top lead? And when they lead, hopefully, the lessons that we're getting from the top will trickle down to other layers of public sector, given the systemic nature of the configuration.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there are all sorts of short-term quick answers. Get rid of them, sack them, vote in a new government, all those sort of things. But because this is deep and systemic, you can make those answers, and they're all very appealing. We think it's going to answer. Have a military government, have a Lee Kuan Yew style. All these things somebody will talk about. But the reality is that accountability is not confrontation, bizarrely enough. It's collaboration. When you accept accountability, you will accept somebody saying you haven't done this right. And you will welcome it because you know that doesn't come from a place that's like, you haven't done it right, therefore I can't wait to get you out of your job so I can have it. You haven't done it right, and let's work on together how we should have done it right. And when I don't get it right, you must tell me you didn't follow the right action, and we'll collaborate. So you must know that being held accountable might be painful, but with the right people in the right way, it's a thrilling thing. It's engaging. You feel yourself grow. You feel your capability. You feel your strength come back through accountability and collaboration, because you start working with other people you can trust. And trust follows deeds, not speeches, you know. And when citizens give up, corruption wins. When they demand more, democracy strengthens. But when you get into a road rage scenario and you completely lose it and you start screaming at whoever's in front of you, it doesn't help at all. We have to have systemic demands. Note what happened. I know this is tedious. Make a list of what went on. Put it on Hello Peter. Give people who want to write about this the ammunition for it. But also, instead of raging at the poor person in front of you, it might be a junior level employee who has to go back to their family. Get the data and say, you haven't done this. You know, in the street I know about, there's been water pipes breaking for the last few months and they haven't been maintained for 15 years. So of course they're going to break. You know, where's the money for that? Well, it's gone to Dubai or wherever it's gone to, you know. But we have to start again. And we have to start in as good a quality as we can to make things work. And we have to make sure that we don't spend our life just having a massive amounts of money. We have the highest Gini coefficient in the world, the highest difference between a few rich and a many who are poor. We need to change that. We can live a very good life without having to have all these things we acquire. You know, we can have a better life, and you'll have a more dignified life if you're working for the common good. That's absolutely sure. Yeah.
Do you think the tide is changing, given the government of national unity? There's two arguments to this, because others are saying, now we're seeing ANC delivering. Others would say, well, you know, ANC needed to be pushed for it to deliver. Do you think, from where you're sitting, based on the conversation that you're having with researchers, academic, public servants, you know, the GNU, to what extent is actually strengthening the delivery of the public service, as it were?
I think we're talking about it, and I think it's a great advance, but we have to act as well. So we need to firstly do what Lee Kuan Yew is and others do, which is build skills and promote people who demonstrate in skills. That requires a certain amount of power. With a weak government, you're not going anywhere. Arguably, the GNU has the capacity now to get rid of the worst of single-party government, you know, and a single-party government can work very well sometimes, you know, as long as it puts the people's interests first. So I think, you know, the question is really, you know, what you believe. The, you know, reason is the PR agency for our emotions and our identity. So if you fully hold on, you only want this party or these people to be the ones who benefit, and somebody criticize them, you will find all sorts of reasons to support your aim. We can argue it both ways. But common sense will tell you, and truth and history will tell you, if you continue to work at something authentically, you may not win even immediately, but you will set examples which people will respect, and they will respect you. Go for being properly respected, even if you don't get the massive amount of early money you want. By building a better society with capability, entrepreneurs will rise. They will create better value. They will start businesses that people will respect. You won't respect people who drive around in flash cars just because they got it through tender manipulation. What does that mean? It means nothing. It's not an example to anybody. It's just an example that there's a shortcut. We have to get rid of the shortcuts. So unfortunately, it's not going to be an easy thing. But you cannot give up. If citizens give up, corruptions win. If citizens demand more, democracy strengthens. It's a moral issue. We are a moral nation, and a lot of people would disagree with me from the facts. How can you say that about South Africa? Well, I see plenty of examples of people being moral. And remember, morality and good example is caught, not taught. It follows through watching somebody in action, and then you will follow. I do not give up on South Africa in the future, not for a moment. I think we are continuing to battle to build it, and let's not stop for a moment.
On that note, Prof, thank you so much for your insights that has strengthened our understanding, that has strengthened the message around the Public Servants Month, your perspective and insight around Batopelu and some of the ethical dilemmas that we're experiencing have certainly given us a bit of hope that indeed it is possible to turn it around and let us not fall victim to cynicism, which often derail us, because our cup should always be full, not half empty. And it's always important to be optimistic in your view, for this is not the country we have. Prof, thank you so much for your time. Beautiful, as always.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Nimrod. I really appreciate it. And thank you very much to the team in the background setting up the program.
Thank you so much. There we go. That's Professor John Foster Pedley sharing with us his invaluable insight this evening as we reflect on September as a public service month. His perspective has certainly restored faith and building towards a narrative of South Africa being a very powerful nation. We're going to have to leave it here. It has been absolutely beautiful. To listeners, have yourself a beautiful evening, further, and shalom.